You're listening to Ask a Black Doctor, Friday Facts About COVID-19 featuring Dr. Bukasi Dubé. Join us every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. for a half an hour as we discuss issues surrounding the current pandemic, vaccines and distribution, dispel myths, provide facts, and address concerns. We'll also be providing updates about COVID-19 vaccines and discuss how we can build a better culture around Black health. Episodes will be available wherever you listen to podcasts, so head on over to thenumbers.fm for the link to the show. Now let's jump into it. Thank you for tuning in to Ask a Black Doctor. I am DJ Ambush, and you're listening to KNUM 96.7 FM. Or, if we're lucky, you're listening to the podcast on whatever streaming service you prefer to listen to podcasts. You can catch us broadcasting live every Friday morning at 8 a.m., and the podcast dropped the exact same time. So, I have Dr. Bukasi Dubé with me today, and we have a room full of guests. Can't wait to jump into today's topic. I feel like this is just something that we naturally would have gotten to with all the discussions we've been having around the information that's been floating around our community, people that have been vaccine hesitant, and then those that have, you know, gone through their specific journeys to get to the place where they're comfortable taking the vaccine. So, Doc, how you been?
Hey, I'm doing well, my man. I'm doing well. It's good to see you. It's an excellent day to be alive.
Yes, absolutely.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. The more news that I hear about us getting closer to having some vaccine solutions for children, I'm loving that. The more people vaccinated, the better.
That's true.
Who do we have with us in the studio, so to speak, today?
So I'm going to start off as people appear on my screen. We have Charles Lott, who's a former basketball player, played at Portland State and then played professionally, and has a phenomenal story to tell. Then next to Charles is, by the way, I should say that we're not in person, hence we're not wearing masks. So just in case anybody sees this and says, hey, how come you're not wearing masks and you're indoors? Then Lionel Coleman, a good friend of mine, who's also a movie director, producer, who's well known around the world for the work that he does. He's got a good story to share, and he's also doing a lot of interesting work in the community. We talked a little in previous podcasts about chronic stress syndrome and how being someone of color in the U.S., you're exposed to things that are incredibly stressful that heighten up your stress hormones and lead to a lot of things like diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, you know, and different types of cancers, poor sleep included among those things, heart attacks, strokes, etc., etc., all from chronic stress syndrome. And Lionel is doing work recently. He'll tell you more about that. He's made some films with regards to that. We'll talk about that later in the show. And then over the weekend, I came across Miss LaFonda Grant, who told a phenomenal story about her kids and how she's become a vaccine advocate. But we have a great podcast and radio show in store today, and you'll get to hear from all these folks, and looking forward to a lively conversation.
Absolutely. So, if I may, let's start with LaFonda. When the pandemic hit, much like all of us, we were looking for answers and how we're going to navigate this. You know, do we stay home? How much toilet paper should we buy? We're wiping down all the surfaces. You know, who do we sneeze on? And, you know, describe what that was for you and some of the concerns you had leading up to them announcing a vaccine.
The concern was shut down everything. Husband was a essential worker. He changed clothes outside and before he came into the house. And we just had a whole system. I'm a mom of 9 children.
9 kids.
Girls. Yeah, and
we gotta bow down to you.
Thank you. We did a total lockdown, so it was more difficult for them. I was okay, but it was more difficult for the kids, you know. But that was the scary part. But it was it also, on the other hand, it was really good because we all have it, because all the so many age differences with me and my kids, with my kids, but we got to do more family oriented things together. So that was pretty cool during the pandemic. It kept us insane, you know, kept us sane.
Yeah. I can imagine. I can imagine. Lionel, how did it affect, I'm sure from the outside looking in, we have some ideas and maybe some misconceptions about how it affected the industry directly. But for you working in TV and film, it seemed like initially there was a little bit of hesitancy about even shutting down. Like, we'll be able to weather this. And then it was like the door just closed. Boom. No, everything stops now. So what was that like from the inside for you?
First of all, I have to call out my doctor friend, Bukozi, who we were having ramen over lunch one day. And I was asking him, I said, hey, so what do you think is going to happen with this COVID-19 thing? And he says to me confidently, I think it'll be a blip on the radar. We won't even be talking about this. So that was my my compass setting from that point. And I was probably a lot more arrogant about it than I should be. Mm. And I remember we were in Hawaii on vacation, and a bunch of my jobs just started systematically canceling and going away. And I was thinking to myself, oh, that's crazy. I'll be shooting again in another month. So we came back home and more jobs started canceling, you know, more people losing their lives and their loved ones. And, you know, after a while, the television and motion picture industry just shut down, and nobody wanted to come to work anymore, and for good reason. So it was a complete shutdown for me. I'm a homebody anyway, so I enjoyed being at home, but certainly stressful when you know that every day you're at home, you're spending all of your money, anything that you've saved, and, you know, just hoping you can weather it like everybody else.
Yeah.
We should note that Lionel and I had this conversation back in March of 2020. When we didn't know what was going on, and everybody thought, this is not going to be that big of a deal. But hey, we learned a lot from it, and we're continuing to learn. And there's a lot of information, a lot of science that's going into the research that's leading to the vaccines and leading to all the precautions that we're taking.
Yeah. I definitely can agree with you on that. I think we've all watched the science progress and change at the more that we learn about this. But to imagine, I mean, honestly, there's no way you could have imagined back then that one, that this would have this much of a global impact. And then also the hesitancy to get vaccinated, stretching this out that much longer. Charles, how was it for you when you were first heard about the vaccine, heard about the pandemic, the COVID-19, how did that affect you and what you have going on?
Well, at first it was real scary for me, because when we really started getting the news about it was killing people was getting on ventilators and stuff, I had scheduled within 2 months, I had scheduled 5 flights on business to 5 different cities. And my son movie premiere was March the 6th. And they had to premiere March the 1st. Now, mind you, one of them flights was to California to go to his movie premiere. Mm. But before the premiere, he had went on a promotion tour. They went to Miami. They had went to Atlanta, New York, and a couple more places. Now, the premiere was on the 6th. Now, this kid had been to four or five different states and cities, him and the crew promoting this movie. And I called him on the phone. I said, man, this is weird. I'm in my 60s, and you, at that time, he was 19 years old. I said, I never thought I'd see the day where I can be around my kids and I can catch something from him and it could cure me.
Right.
You know, and so that was spooky. But I go down to the premiere. Everything was fine. I didn't catch anything. The five trips that I had, I went on two of them, and every week, the information, we was getting more information. You know, every week, you know, you learn something else. And finally, I sit down, I'm like, this is serious.
Yeah.
You know, when you start hearing about people dying. So I flew back to Portland, and I just chilled out, you know, gyms are closed down. I'm a big workout freak. The gym had closed down. So I started walking around the neighborhood, which was good because I did a lot of stuff that I normally didn't do. I mean, my neighborhood, I walked around the neighborhood and jogged around the neighborhood. I saw stuff that I had never seen before. Mm. I had been staying in this neighborhood for 10 years. So it was good. And in some ways, it was scary because of the unknown,
right?
You know, but I got through it, and my family got through it, and it made me slow my life down and you know, reflect and really appreciate the things and the accomplishments and stuff that I was blessed with.
Yeah.
So that was my experience when it first happened.
I feel like I've heard similar sentiments too, Doc. I'm sure you have, as far as how being in quarantine has forced us all to just slow down and pace ourselves and look at everything a lot differently. Just even looking at some of the challenges that organizations are facing in the workforce now, where people are like, no, it's going to take a little bit more to get me to come back to work. It's going to take a higher wage. It's going to take better benefits. It's going to take a better work environment to pull me back into the workforce.
And I think that's true, right? We see it. It's highlighted in the three stories that have just been shared with LaFonda talking about how her husband had to change outside and the disruption in the family. Yet there was a benefit to that, in that she spent a lot of time, mm-hmm. a whole lot more time with the family. And just like Charles just shared, right, that he was able to walk around his neighborhood and get to learn about his neighborhood, and they'd been there for 10 years. and Lionel being stuck in Hawaii because of and having more family time because of everything shutting down. I think it was very, very interesting that the first professional league to shut down was the NBA, right? Mm-hmm. They led the way in forcing everybody to think about this, to rethink this whole pandemic and how serious it was. So kudos to the NBA and the folks that made the decision to shut things down.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so fast forward months later, we start hearing about the vaccine. And the first thing that came to my mind was, who's going to get it first? Who's going to have access? Not necessarily who are they going to test it on. I was more like, who is going to have the ability to have access to this vaccine? There are members of our community and every community that, like, I don't want to be a guinea pig for it. But on the other side, it was like, but if it works, I want it quickly. I want it before anyone else can. And it wasn't even so much about, I need to get vaccinated to get back to work. I need to get vaccinated to get back to normal. It was, I just need to get vaccinated so I'm not on a ventilator. So months later, when we started talking about, you know, the vaccine being a reality, what were some of the early reactions that you all had? Anyone can chime in first.
I'll go first. I mean, I didn't really have much hesitancy about it, only because I can call up Bacozy and he always gives me a lot of knowledge about anything medical, really. But this especially, you know, one of the things that he said was, is, you know, when the vaccine for polio was first introduced, there was really no FDA at that point to approve it, yet people were lining up to take it because nobody wanted polio. And I know for me, I was really into this idea of herd immunity. And I figured, you know what, if the FDA has approved it, I'm a believer in science. I would like to get it because I want to be someone who does not get COVID-19. And I want to also be someone who does not give someone COVID-19. That was probably even more important for me.
I like how you bring up, sorry, Charles. I like how you bring up the recent history, right? With polio back in the back in the 60s and 70s, and how, you know, we came together as a country and said we wanted to defeat polio, and the same should be true for COVID-19. Sorry, Charles, I interrupted you. Go ahead, my man.
No problem. When they first started talking about a vaccine, at the beginning I didn't pay too much attention, and then when they started picking up legs and you start hearing more about it, my first thought was, as a lot of Black men and women, the Tuskegee experience, and actually, you know, I don't let stuff from the past dictate how I live my life now, because most information and stuff that you want to learn about you, it's, you know, you can just get on the internet and you can do a lot of research. What I did, I got a sister that's been a nurse for about 35 years, and I called her and asked her, what did she think about the vaccine? And I asked her, when they get it approved, are she going to take it? And she said, brother, I don't know. And she said, I'm going to do some research. And I said, I will too. My next door neighbor in Happy Valley was a doctor. So I remember I was going back to my old neighborhood in Happy Valley, because it's hilly, to walk. And I actually rung his doorbell, and he happened to be at home. And we sit down and we talk for about an hour about the vaccine. And I asked him, I said, if they make a vaccine and it get approved, I asked him, would he take it? He said, I work with people every day. And what made me more comfortable, he asked me, he said, well, what's your alternative? And I thought about it. I'm like, wow, I don't like the alternative if I didn't take it. So a few more weeks passed by, maybe a month, and they actually had approved one of them. And I called my sister again. I said, the first thing I wanted to know was the doctors taking it. And once she told me the doctors was taking it, that made me feel more comfortable. I don't care what the government do, how much distrust we have for them, some of us. They might experiment, but we always gonna need doctors. So when I found out that the doctors were taking the vaccine, and my sister said she was gonna take it, it kind of freed me up to feel more comfortable about taking it.
That's definitely a really great way to look at it. I had not considered that at all.
Yeah.
Doctors are a protected class, so we need them around.
Yeah, we need them.
They're taking it.
And actually, as of today, we have about 97% of physicians in this country vaccinated. So it shows that, you know, the people who are on the front lines, the people who know a lot about this, trust these vaccines and are taking them at much, much higher rates than anybody else. LaFonda, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, as far as me, I had no intentions on taking it. I wanted to wait to see how other people reacted to it. there was another country that had a vaccine before us, and it worked for a little bit, and then it just turned bad for them, and their numbers start getting high again. So that was a signal, like, hold up, let's wait some more. So the more people that I heard that got vaccinated, and hearing some with side effects, some without side effects, you know, I just had to do my own research, watch the news, see what was happening all around, and basically, you know, play it by ear. But I wasn't going to jump into it no time real soon until I had all as much bases covered, you know. And I have my auntie, she's been in the medical field. She's a head nurse down in Texas. And where she worked at, they didn't get a lot of people in until late, her area. So I was waiting and she was waiting, and we would conversate, you know, to see what was going on down there and what was going on up here. So mostly just communicating and waiting to see what's happening, because we want the vaccination,
right?
But we don't want to get it right away until we know, is there side effects? And what kind of detoured me too was because they was announcing it over the news where they didn't have a lot of people of color to come in. They needed more people of color to come in and get the vaccination. So it was like, they ain't even got enough people to see how it's going to turn out. So nope, you know, so that's how that went.
So I could imagine you hearing that and feeling like, I will not subject myself to being a guinea pig. You're not going to
exactly.
Me. I feel you. We got kind of a similar reaction to some of the incentives that have been used to get people to get vaccinated, whether it's free entry into a lottery, paying people $100 and $150 to get vaccinated. There've been a couple. You know, there's all types of incentives, free donuts, free pre-rolled weed. And it seems like while that may work for some, for others, like, why are you trying to entice us? Why are you trying to trick us into putting these tracking devices and magnets and whatever else is in the vaccine? Why are you trying to trick us into doing that? So to hear that that's, you know, that was one of your early you know, skepticisms makes a lot of sense. I think there are people still dealing with that today. The first episode of our podcast, Bukosi and I spent some time just going down the list of different things that people were saying about the vaccine. It was like, this isn't true. That's not true for this reason. Here's the science for that. And here we are, you know, months later, still dealing with some of these same issues. Lionel, I want to ask you, within your industry, in an effort to get back to business, because this is multi-million, these are billion-dollar industry, keeping the crew safe, keeping the actors safe is paramount to staying on schedule. But it does seem as though here and there are people that are still vaccine hesitant across all industries. What are some of the ways that you guys are working around that?
Well, I know that once we were allowed to come back, you're tested every other day. For me, before I was going on a shoot, no one was allowed in the house. I was just doing the best I possibly could to keep, you know, my interactions with people at a minimum. Now that people are back, I think that our industry is probably more full of people who want to be vaccinated, you know, who believe in the power of herd immunity. I think it's sort of, I hate to say it's a niche industry, but, you know, certainly the people who pursue the arts, I think, are probably a little bit more liberal and accepting of science and understanding of science and not necessarily pushing back on it. Now, I know that there will be, you know, outliers who just don't want to do it and don't want any part of it. But I do feel that there's going to come a time with us where having a vaccine card that says that you have your vaccine is going to be a gateway into employment. And because so much of what we do is independent contractors, there's no necessary need to abide by, sort of the populist vote, really. It's like, you have your vaccine card, perfect. You're invited, I'm set. You don't, sorry, you can't work for us.
Right, right. That really highlights the individual decision. Go ahead, Charles.
Maybe 7 or 8 months ago, my son is into acting, and he had got a couple of guest role spots, and it was kind of weird because I was out in California, and what they was doing was they would send a person to your home to give you a test. And it was weird because I would hear my son make the appointment, the day before the shoot. And I asked myself, well, why do you always make your appointment around 6 or 7 o'clock? And he said, well, Dad, once I take that, take the test, I can't go back out. I can't go out in the community. I have to stay till the next morning. When I leave here, I got to go to the set. So actually, that was good because he didn't have to leave the house. They sent people to the home to give you the test. My degree is in sociology and psychology, and I'm really into numbers. And I don't care whether it's the COVID vaccine or any vaccine that they make for any type of disease, it's always going to be some casualties. Somebody going to have an adverse effect just by having a shot. Somebody probably died from it. But what I did was the first 4 or 5 months when they started distributing the shot, it was some people passed away. Some of them had side effects that was unusual. What I did was I looked at the numbers. I said, okay, at that point, when they first started out, maybe the first month, there was, about 10 million people had took the vaccine. And out of 10 million people, two people had a side effect. I like those odds. You see what I'm saying? 10 million and two, that's not even 1%.
Yeah.
And another thing that I noticed, like I said, I'm into numbers. Since this COVID came out, it's been about 45 million Americans that have actually been infected. And out of 45 million, I think there was about 700,000 died from it. That's not 1%. It seemed like a lot of people because the numbers are so large, So it's a lot of stuff if you look at the numbers and follow the numbers instead of the stuff you see and hear on Fox News. You can make a rational decision if you follow the numbers and don't listen to all the misinformation.
Fox News.
That's true.
Facebook.
That's true.
Instagram.
Man, terrible information.
Yeah, your text message, WhatsApp, it's all over the place at this point.
I had so many people calling me, asking me, Charles, did you take the test? I don't know who, I guess I'm known for really researching stuff. And I told a lot of people, that, yes, I took the vaccine, to me, it was a separate choice.
Right.
Some people it's hard for them to make the decision, but for me, it was simple. I just followed the numbers,
I like that. I like that you became a vaccine advocate, Charles, preaching to folks. What we know is that there are two main drivers to increasing vaccine confidence and people actually getting vaccines, at least at this point. One is your provider, your doctor told you to get or advised you to get vaccinated. The second one is your friend, your neighbor, your brother, your sister, yeah. family member said, hey, you know, it's a good idea to get vaccinated. That is incredibly powerful. It moves the needle in terms of getting folks vaccinated. Along those lines, LaFonda, you have 9 children. How many of those are vaccinated, and what's going on with your kids?
Well, what happened was, after I got the, I felt like it was a green light. I said, well, we need to get all our graduates. We missed a lot, you know, during COVID. We had 2 that graduated. They didn't get to do a graduation. So they didn't get to have the proms. They didn't have to have no sort of fun. So what we did was we decided to take a trip and go to Mexico and celebrate. Well, in order for everybody to go, I told them that they had to be vaccinated first. So, you know, I kind of told a little white lie so they could get vaccinated, because they was ready to go. I was ready to go. So I took that opportunity to get them vaccinated before we left, because, you know, we was going to Mexico and we didn't want to come back with no other heebie-jeebies. So we might as well go ahead and step and get our feet wet and plunge on into it, get it done and get it over with. So that's why we had, but I had one that didn't get vaccinated, but when he came back, he was okay. But when he came back, a real good friend of his had got COVID and was doing really bad, you know. So we're still working on him to get vaccinated, but his doctor, he got his aunties, his siblings, he's got a lot of us. But you know, when they get those, the young adults, when they get to make their own choice, sometimes they like to sit back and procrastinate. I call it procrastinating, because he don't want to listen to what everybody is telling him to do. So we're going to just leave him alone. And when it gets quiet down, I know he'll go do it.
Well, now he has his mama calling him out on radio.
Grandma done got the shot. She mama done got the shot. All of us done had got vaccinated, you know?
And yeah, yeah.
Shoot, my pregnant daughter, she's got her appointment to go get vaccinated, because my grandbaby got to come here and have some kind of, you know, in his system, because they don't even offer the shot for babies.
Right.
And so that's true, right? That's
the baby's born, he'll have some of her immunity, you know, in him.
Yeah.
Her vaccinations for a little while. So, you know, I'd be really on them. It's important.
Yeah.
It's very important.
So I'm hearing all these stories about vaccine advocates in the community. It makes public health that much easier if we can all band together and talk about encouraging folks to get vaccinated. Lionel, you are doing some work along these lines related to talking about the stress that people face and that people of color have to deal with in this country. And I know that you have a documentary, a short film that you just made recently that's getting a lot of attention that addresses some of these issues. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, absolutely. The film's called These Final Hours, and it was sort of brought on, I guess, inspired by the murders of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and many other Black people in this country who basically died for being Black. And our film, it's fictional in nature, but I think that every city has shown that this could happen there, necessarily. Being murdered, but certainly being arrested, beaten up, accused because of your skin color. And like you were saying before, the perceptions that people have of folks who have darker skin is just baffling in this country, and how a young man could be murdered at gunpoint in Georgia by a white militia, basically, who just were under the assumption that he had robbed a home somewhere. And to not have that even come to light, really, until months after. So we made this film. It's currently in film festivals. It's going to be going to a lot of other film festivals. We hope to get into Sundance, and the ultimate goal would be to win an Academy Award. But the ultimate is to just have everyone watch it, whether you're Black, white, yellow, brown, whatever. We as a country will have to start looking at each other much differently if we're ever going to survive. We went to Spain over the summer, and what a completely different experience there. You have harmony with colors. No one is accusing anyone of this or that because you're this skin color or that skin color. I just think that if we're going to lead the world in how we treat each other, we're going to have to do better. And I hope that this film starts the conversation.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think it speaks to the issue of what we're talking about before the show started, which is chronic stress syndrome, right? When your stress hormones are elevated, which leads to a lot of issues that come with having stress hormones being elevated chronically, leading to all the other medical issues that come with that, which we have come to know during this pandemic as pre-existing conditions. And we know that people who have died the most from this pandemic are those that have pre-existing conditions. And surprise, 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 it's people of color. So it's something that we have to think about, something we have to talk about. So thank you very much for shedding some light into that. And
yeah, definitely. So in doing the research and putting this work together, I can imagine you consumed a greater deal of stress in creating, just in the process of going over police videos and data nationally as you're putting the narrative together. And this was all happening during the pandemic, correct? That you're working on this project?
Yeah, correct. We shot in Los Angeles in November and December, the end of November, early December. And yes, it doesn't take too much research, really. When I was a teenager living in San Francisco, I was coming out of my apartment, going to high school. And San Francisco police officer squad car pulls up. Two cops come out, and they immediately arrest me, put me in the back of the car. I said, "What am I being arrested for?" And they said, "Well, there's a robbery and you fit the description." So I'm sitting in the back of the car, you know, thinking to myself, "My God, how am I going to explain this to my father?" You know, you always think about your dad and, you know, how that's going to play out. But over the police radio, I hear a suspect is described as a white male, 6 feet tall, yada, 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 yada. So these guys say, "Well, that doesn't look like you. So you're free to go." But that's just, I think, how people think, right? And that was not in the film, but you know, my son Tyson said, "Dad, you have to put something in there where people cross the street when they see us, because this happens frequently, especially in the evening or in certain neighborhoods." You know, you could look back on your own history and just draw so many times where you were perceived as being something different just because of the color of your skin. And so it didn't take too much to look at what was going on and try to inject moments of this into the film that I think all of us experience and we've obviously seen on the news.
Yeah. And I brought that up to ask, you know, in direct relation to chronic stress syndrome, what are some of the things you all have done, Lionel, of course, you during that process, to kind of like reverse the effects, trying to make yourself feel a little bit better, a little less stressful with everything that was going on in the world? Because again, this is part of our therapy. This is part of actually being healthy, to being in less stressful situations. Charles, you did say you ended up doing some more walking around the community, you know, spending some more time outside, going to other communities to walk. What are some of the other things that you all have done to kind of combat the stress that we've all been experiencing?
I know.
Go ahead.
I know. With me and my family, we're very competitive. Well, we got all these boys, so we got all these sports and things going on. But being at home to get off some of the stress, we got up and we did exercise together. You know, exercise is a real good thing to release frustration. We also had a lot of challenges that we would put online where people would vote to see who made the best box house or just competitional things so that they can be doing things besides being on video games all day, something to stimulate their brain and not have to be so frustrated and stressed or worried about what's going on over here or worried about what's going over there. You know, we would sit down and eat dinner at the table and discuss how we felt about certain topics or let someone pick a topic to talk about. And we will all sit around and discuss about how we felt about it or if we had something to say about it. So we did a lot of mental health things around the table as a family. And everybody got to speak about how they felt about it.
Amazing. Charles, you were going to say something?
Yeah, for me, besides walking and jogging in the neighborhood, before the pandemic, I wouldn't watch movies on TV. I would only watch sports documentaries. Because once you have been on movie sets and watched movies being made, it's good and it's bad. You see how fake it is, and it make you don't want to watch movies. But you know, documentaries have a little truth in it, you know. So what I did was I watched a lot of movies, a lot of movies. The other thing I did on YouTube, they have this show called, I think, Bright Side, and it tells you how to get more out of your iPhone if you have an iPhone, you know, like different apps, different stuff it could do. And I'm like, wow, I didn't know this phone can do this. And I would just lay down and I would pause it and go to the setting and just found out, oh man, the iPhone is I just learned so much about the phone, stuff it could do that you never know about when you buy the phone, they don't tell you.
Yeah.
And that was, man, I got so much education with this iPhone. The other thing I did was I talked to a lot of people about getting a vaccination. Mm-hmm. And one thing I learned, I never forget it. The first person I talked to was a friend of mine, my age, from Louisiana. And he's a conspiracy theorist, you know. And I got the vaccine. We was talking about the vaccine. And he asked me, you know, how was the vaccine? I had took both shots. I said, well, you know, I took the first shot. I said, my arm hurt for about 2 or 3 days and I was fine. I said, the second shot, my arm hurt it and I was a little tired for a few days. And I'm telling you this story because when you tell people your reaction or response once you took a shot, don't say your arm was hurt. Because as soon as I told him my arm was hurting for 2 or 3 days, he said, no, man, I don't want it. You know, so I had to start saying my arm was sore for a few days. Mm. You know, because everybody asked when I used the word hurt, They didn't respond to that. Okay. Yeah, when I said that would hurt, so I started saying, "Hey, my arm was sore for a few days." You know, like I said, I watched so many movies, and me and my son was talking about this the other day. Netflix is not showing the same movies. There's nothing new on there. You know, I think the newest thing was the Squid Game, the new thing that just came out. Mm-hmm. So I move it out. I'm glad stuff is Hulu. I don't watch all this stuff. You talking to a person that wouldn't watch nothing but documentaries and sports. I don't watch every movie. I'm all caught up from 1950. You know, you know, there's nothing like relieving stress and learning something at the same time. You can't beat it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, so that's how I deal with it.
True that.
Awesome. Before we close, Lionel, what were some of the things that you may have done to help relieve some of the stress?
You know, I'm the complete opposite. If there's a movie, I'm watching it. But no, I decided to go and make a movie. I spent a good portion of my life during that time trying to figure out something to say. We made our movie, we shot it, I was in post-production on it, and you know, like everybody else, sitting around watching the news and praying for a better day. But yeah, I made a movie and watched a lot of movies.
Well, we're grateful for the work you've done with this film. We're grateful for all of the work you all have done in the community, having these conversations. And that's what it is, right? We're not asking people to put on capes and be, you know, Vax Man and try to, just having conversations with people in your circle. That's what it's going to take, these one-on-one interactions. You all mentioned one common thread in what brought you to be able to trust a vaccine, and it was having a connection in the medical community. Everyone said, I talked to a doctor or a nurse or my sister, like everyone mentioned someone in their life in the medical community. But a lot of us don't have those connections or don't trust. And historically, it makes sense. So to be able to use your security, your sense of security in the vaccine, and to leverage those personal connections with people is the best, I would think, is the best form of you know, getting people vaccinated and getting people to a more informed place within this. Thank you all so much. This has been an amazing episode. Doc, you got any closing words?
Oh, just thank you very much to LaFonda, to Charles, to Lionel. I mean, great stories. And Marsha McDonald, shout out to you for your work with teenagers at Highland Haven Church and all your team there. So thank you.
All right. Thank you all for tuning in. We will catch you next week.
Peace.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, everybody. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Ask a Black Doctor, airing every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. right here on The Numbers. If you missed it, you can find the link to the full episodes on our website at thenumbers.fm. You can also subscribe to the podcast on all streaming platforms. Be sure to rate and leave a comment. If you have questions you'd like answered on future episodes, you can submit them through our website or the link in our bio on Instagram and Twitter.